Lord Peter Whimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter, with Ambrosine Philpotts as Miss Clemson, and Gabriel Wolfe as Inspector Parker. Unnatural Death by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 7 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 6, Vera Findlater. Lord Peter Whimsey is convinced that Mary Whittaker murdered her great-aunt Agatha Dawson some 18 months previously, and that, since his investigations began, she's been trying to silence anyone who might have cause to suspect her. He's therefore extremely surprised when Inspector Parker informs him that all Miss Whittaker's recent movements can, in fact, be satisfactorily accounted for.
A cast-iron alibi, Charles?
Just so. Don't forget, Evelyn Gotobed only thought she saw Mary lying in wait for her at Liverpool. Vera Findlater swears that throughout the whole of May, the two of them were sharing a cottage in Kent from which they hardly moved, and when they did, it seems, it was always together.
And you say Miss Clemson told you this?
Yes. When I went down to Leehampton on Monday, I tried to tell you about it yesterday, but you were in far too much of a hurry to get to Lord's.
Look, don't berate me, old Parker Bird. I apologise on bended knee. Now tell me all, I prithee. I'm so eager to hear what Miss Clemson, the most faithful of sleuths, has been doing on my behalf, that I even promised to sit still and say nothing throughout the entire telling.
That'll be a miracle. All right. Well, I called on Miss Clemson at Mrs. Budge's just before leaving Leehampton. She said she'd walk to the station with me in the hope that we might meet Mary Whittaker.
You didn't, did you?
Wait.
Sorry.
Almost as soon as we'd left Mrs. Budge's, Miss Clemson started to tell me about Vera Findlater.
She is such a silly, gushing girl, Mr. Parker, full of affectations and a parrot-like repetition of modern shibboleths. I feel genuinely sorry for her. I always think such things are an indication of real unhappiness underneath. Don't you?
Yes, undoubtedly.
It may be natural for a schoolgirl to be schwärmerisch, but in a young woman of 22, it is thoroughly undesirable. Mary Whittaker encourages it, of course. She would. She likes to have someone to admire her and to run her errands. And I'm afraid, Mr. Parker, she prefers it to be a stupid person who will not compete with her. Oh, but I'm sorry. You must think I'm being thoroughly uncharitable today.
No, I assure you, Miss Clemson, not at all.
Oh, yes, indeed. I must remember to ask forgiveness. Good. Gracious me, and I was only going to tell you about Vera Findlater coming to tea, and now look what I've said. It is only because I'm certain that Mary Whittaker is doing the poor girl no good. You understand?
I understand perfectly. And please tell me about your tea party.
Oh, yes, of course, Mr. Parker. I'm so sorry.
Not at all.
Well, Vera was very ready to tell me all about their month in the country. You remember they went to look at chicken farms as Miss Whittaker was considering buying one?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, it appears that after they toured around for a few days, they heard of a delightful poultry farm for sale near Orpington. Mm-hmm. Naturally, it wouldn't have been wise to take it over without making some inquiries. And Vera said that by the greatest good fortune, they'd found a charming little cottage to let, furnished, quite close by. The poor girl was, I'm afraid, absurdly enthusiastic about the month they'd spent there together.
Oh, we did enjoy it so, Miss Clemson. It was quite delightful keeping house together. Mary and I really are tremendous friends. I'm so looking forward to helping her run the farm when we take it.
So it's all settled then?
Oh, yes, and I'm sure it's going to be quite wonderful.
Won't you find it rather dull and lonely, just you two girls together?
Oh, no.
Are you sure? You mustn't forget, Vera, that you've been accustomed to see quite a lot of young people in Leehampton. Shan't you miss the tennis parties and the young men and so on?
Decidedly not. We're interested in things, not in men.
Well, you've made a good start at finding out how it's going to work. Living with someone for a month is an excellent test. I suppose you had somebody to do the housework for you.
Oh, not a soul. We did every bit of it, and it was great fun. I'm ever so good at scrubbing floors and laying fires and things, and Mary's a simply marvellous cook. We both believe that a friendship ought to be absolutely 50-50, don't you?
Well, yes, that is the ideal friendship, I suppose. But I think it's a very rare thing. Among women, that is. Men, I believe, find it easier to give and take in that way. Probably because they have so many outside interests.
Men's friendships? Oh, yes. I know one hears a lot about them. But half the time, I don't believe they're real friendships at all. Men can go off for years and forget all about their friends. And they don't really confide in one another. Mary and I tell each other all our thoughts and feelings. Men seem just content to think each other good sorts without ever bothering about their inmost selves.
Probably that's why their friendships last so well. They don't make such demands on one another.
But a great friendship does make demands. It's got to be just everything to one. It's wonderful the way it seems to colour all one's thoughts. Instead of being centred in oneself, one's centred in the other person. Well, that's what Christian love means. One's ready to die for the other person.
Well, I don't know. I cannot help feeling, my dear, that it is more natural, more proper, in a sense, for a man and a woman to be all to one another than for two persons of the same sex. Well, after all, it is a fruitful affection and all that, you know. But I'm sure that when the right man comes along...
Oh, bother the right man! I do hate that kind of talk. Makes one feel dreadful, like a prize cow or something. Well, surely we've got beyond that point of view in these days.
Yes, of course, dear. But, well, you haven't finished telling me all about your wonderful month in the country. Whatever did you find to do when you weren't inquiring into the poultry business? Do tell me. I'm such a townie, I'm afraid.
Oh, we ran round in the car and saw places and attended markets. Markets are frightfully amusing, with all funny old farmers and people.
Did you run up to town at all?
No, Mary hates town.
I thought you rather enjoyed a run-up now and then.
I'm not keen. Not now. I used to think I was, but I expect that was only the spiritual restlessness one gets when one hasn't an object in life. There's nothing in it.
So you were together, just you two, all the time?
Every minute of it, and we weren't bored with one another a bit. Mary and I are absolutely happy together, Miss Climpson, absolutely happy.
So you see, Mr. Parker, Mary Whittaker couldn't have been in Liverpool that day. Vera Finlater is a sufficient guarantee of that.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you, Miss Climpson. Lord Peter, I'm sure, will be most interested in what you've told me. And grateful, too, I know, for your diligence.
Lord Peter is extremely kind. Well, here we are at the station. No Miss Whittaker, I'm afraid.
Well... Perhaps that's just as well on reflection. I'm not sure that I am particularly keen on her seeing me. I might arouse her curiosity. Yes, and by the way, you'd better explain me in some way to Mrs. Budge, or she may be a bit inquisitive too.
Oh, but I have. When Mrs. Budge said there was a Mr. Parker to see me, I realized at once that she mustn't know who you were. So I said, quite quickly, Mr. Parker! Oh, that must be my nephew Adolphus. You don't mind being Adolphus, do you? It's funny, but that was the only name that came into my mind at the moment. I can't think why, for I've never known an Adolphus.
Miss Climpson, you're a marvellous woman. I wouldn't even mind if you'd call me Marmaduke, or even at a pinch, Montmorency.
Well, Charles, or should I say Adolphus? That does seem to exclude Mary Whittaker from the Liverpool caper, don't it? Ah, well, never mind. At least your Miss Findlater can't give her an alibi for the murder of her great-aunt.
No.
Or, for that matter, for the attempted murder of Mr. Trigg.
No, again, but What precisely is your theory, Peter, that she's trying to polish off everyone who had anything to do with Miss Dawson at all? If so, why has she spared Dr. Carr, Nurse Philiter, or Nurse Forbes?
I think I know why. Up to the present, you see, the Dawson case has presented two different problems, one legal and one medical. The motive and the means, if you like that better. We now have the motive. She wanted her great-aunt to die before the new Property Act came into force. But as to the means, well, I must say that still appears completely insoluble. I am baffled, Watson, said he, his hawk-like eyes gleaming angrily from under the half-closed lids. Even I am baffled. But not for long, he cried, with a magnificent burst of self-confidence. My honour, capital H, is concerned to track down this human fiend, capitals, to its hidden source, and nail the whited sepulchre to the mast, even though it crush me in the attempt. Loud applause. His chin sank broodingly upon his dressing gown, and he breathed a few guttural notes into the bass saxophone, which was the cherished companion of his solitary hours in the bathroom.
Finished?
Finished? I've hardly begun. The means, I repeat, seems insoluble. And so the criminal evidently thinks too. Consequently, there has been no exaggerated mortality among the doctors and nurses. No, the motive is the weak point. Hence the hurry to stop the mouths of the people who knew about the legal part of the problem.
If it virtually no mouths have been stopped, Peter. Well, certainly Mr. Trigg was inveigled into a house of mystery and drugged, but he escaped. And until Miss Clemson confirms that Mary has that scar on the back of her right hand, we can't even be certain that that was her. And as for the go-to-bed sisters, one mistakenly thought she saw Miss Whittaker at Liverpool and has since returned to Canada unharmed. The other died of natural causes.
Under very suspicious circumstances. Well, don't forget Mrs. Forrest of South Audley Street, Charles. We put her forward as an accomplice before. Mary Whittaker may have been touring Kentish markets with the devoted Miss Findlater ever by her side, but Mrs. Forrest was very much at large in the merry, merry month of May. And have you noticed something else? The remarkable similarity, in some ways, between Mr. Trigg's adventure and my own little adventure-let, as you might say, in South Audley Street?
Your visit to Mrs. Forrest?
Just so. The secret appointment, the drink, the endeavour to get one to stay the night. I'm positive there was something in that sugar, Charles, that no sugar should contain.
Well, I still think, you know, that we ought to get some evidence that actual crimes have been committed. Oh, call me finicking if you like. But if you could suggest a means of doing away with all these people so as to leave no trace, I should feel happier about it.
The means, eh? You want me to divine the means as well, even though I've already built you up a case out of nothing?
Yes, please, and make it something that leaves no trace.
Base ingratitude, that's what's the matter with you. Very well, Charles. I'll think of something. Hello, Whimsy speaking.
Ah, Peter. Thanks for sending round Miss Clemson's letter about Mary Whittaker's scar. The chief's very impressed by it.
He is? Oh, well, about time.
Listen. We reckon it amounts to virtual proof of her involvement in the Trigg business, so I'm going down to Leehampton now with a warrant. Do you want to come?
Rather. What are we going to haul her in for? Break in and enter in? Burglary? Attempted murder? Stealing coal? Well,
nothing, necessarily. Just adds a bit of authority to any inquiries we make. Anyway, you'd like to come?
Oh, certainly.
Good.
A breath of country air would do me good, I fancy. Blow away the cobwebs, don't you know?
The police car will be leaving in an hour. Oh, and we've got to pick up the Chief Constable of Hampshire on the way, as it seems he knows Mary Whittaker and is pretty dubiously disposed towards the whole business. So be on time, will you?
Righto, I'll be there. Though, mind you, I hate being driven by another fellow. Never mind, I will be bloody, bold, and resolute, as Queen Victoria said to the Archbishop of Canterbury.
This is Miss Whittaker's house, Parker. But I feel sure you're both quite mistaken about this criminal. Accomplice? Oh, bless me. I've had considerable experience in the course of a long life, longer than either of yours. And I really feel convinced that Miss Whittaker, whom I know quite well, is as good and nice a girl as you could wish to find.
I can only say I sincerely hope you're right, sir. Let's go in, shall we?
After you, Sir Charles.
Oh, thank you.
I'll do the talking, Peter.
All right, here.
Yes? Oh, sir! Oh, have you come to say something's happened to Miss Whittaker?
Miss Whittaker's not at home, then?
No, sir. She went out in the car with Miss Linklater on Monday, sir. And she hasn't come back. Nor Miss Linklater neither. And I'm frightened something's happened to them. When I see you, sir, I thought you was the police come to say there'd been an accident. I didn't know what to do, sir.
Well, calm down now. And tell us, do you know where they were going?
Crow's Beach, Miss Whittaker said, sir.
That's a good 50 miles, Parker. Probably they've just decided to stay there a day or two.
No, but they didn't take no things for the night, sir. They went off about 10 in the morning. They said they was going to have lunch there and then come home in the evening. And Miss Whittaker hasn't written or nothing, and they're always so particular. Oh, cook and me, we didn't know what to do.
I expect it's all right, don't worry. It's a pity, though, as we particularly wanted to see Miss Whittaker. When you hear from her, you might say Sir Charles Pillington called as a friend, would you?
Well, yes, sir, but please, sir, what are we to do, sir?
Nothing. Don't worry. I'll have inquiries made. I'm the chief constable, you know, and I can soon find out whether there's been an accident or anything.
No.
Oh, come now, my girl, pull yourself together. There's nothing to get upset about. We'll let you know as soon as we hear anything. Good day to you.
Goodbye, sir.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Come along, Parker.
It's coming, sir. Skipped, by God.
Yes. Oh, well, joggle him up, I say. Keep him moving. That's the spirit. Always like it when something happens. What now, then, Charles?
Parker, what are you standing around for? There's undoubtedly been an accident of some kind. We must get an investigation underway.
Yes, sir, of course. We shall need a description of the car. Didn't Miss Clemson mention it in one of her letters, Peter?
Black Austin 7, number XX9917.
Good, good. I'll put out an all-stations call at once.
All stations? Don't be ridiculous, man. If Miss Whittaker said she was going to Crow's Beach, that's where she went. You may count on it.
Well, I'd say exactly the opposite direction was more likely.
So would I. Mm-hmm. I think I'll put inquiries through to all the ports as well, though. With 4 days' start, they may be anywhere by now.
And you might tell them at the yard to keep an eye on Mrs. Forrest's place, too.
Yes.
When anything sensational happens to a criminal, it's a good tip to watch the accomplice.
Parker!
He's coming, sir. Yes, we'd better get hold of some photographs of the two girls, too.
Mm-hmm. Come along, man. All we have to do is to contact the Crow's Beach Force. This is a perfectly straightforward accident inquiry.
Yes, sir, at once. Meanwhile, Peter, we'd better make arrangements to stay overnight. I don't suppose we'll get anything to go on until tomorrow morning.
No. After all, it's not that they've only gone as far as Crow's Beach, eh?
No.
Hey, Sir Charles.
What?
Never mind.
What? What?
Parker? Yes? Morning. Ah. Ah, where? Crow's Beach. Yes, thank you. Yes. Bye. Well, I'm damned. Do you hear that, Peter?
Wow.
Crow's Beach excursion was genuine. After all, the boys there say the car was spotted last Monday by an AA man.
Ah, what did I tell you? See, Parker, for all your Scotland Yard airs, we local bobbies sometimes know what we're talking about, huh?
Yes, sir. Well, we'd better get over there at once.
Have you seen the morning papers, Charles?
Oh, I haven't got time to look at the... Good Lord. Is that us? The disappearing girls. Police watch ports.
That's us, old thing. Somebody in Leehampton must have been talking.
Damnation.
Now, listen to this. A massive police hunt swung into operation last night.
Oh.
A report that two young women had tea in a suspicious manner at Folkestone on Tuesday has already...
Just a minute.
Yeah.
Parker? Yes? Yes, here. Oh. Yes, that sounds promising. Ah, yes, excellent. Now, then, where did you say again? Shelley Head. Good. Oh, yes, as soon as we can. Yes, thank you. Bye. It's Crow's Beach Station again. A boy scout called Alf Dawkins says that on Monday he saw two ladies having a picnic on the downs near Shelley Head.
That's about 10 miles from Crow's Beach, along the coast. Rather pretty. Lonely, though. Gorse, heather, that sort of thing.
Yes, thank you, sir. They had a car, an Austin 7. The lad noticed it had a London number, though he can't remember positively what it was.
Well, I don't need any more convincing. Boy Scouts never get that sort of detail wrong.
Let's go and pick him up, then. Are you coming with us, Sir Charles?
Oh, certainly, yes, certainly. You'll be glad of my local knowledge, what? Eh? What?
It was about here, sir. I saw them. Two of them, there was. Sitting over there.
Uh-huh. Right, then. All out. Let's have a look round. Yeah, well, we'd better spread out. I'm not quite sure what we're looking for, so keep your eyes skinned for anything. Signs of a picnic? Huh? The sandwich paper, cigarette package, anything like that. Won't be any car tracks, I don't suppose.
No, the chalk's too dry and hard.
All right. Well, let's quarter the ground. Sir Charles, could you take that section right up to the woods?
Sir, can I search you for real?
Yes, Alf, you may. Peter, you take this side. I'll look along here.
Charles?
Yes?
Look. Now, over there in the wood. Do you see something glinting?
Yes.
I think that's the windscreen of a motor car.
What?
A car?
Alf.
Alf, come back. No, be careful.
Race you!
Little devil. Come on, Peter. Are you all right, Sir Charles?
Oh, yes, yes. Don't you worry about me. I'll catch you up. I'll catch you up.
That's double X, double 917. That's her, all right, Peter.
Ah, yes.
Yes, it's in neutral. The handbrake's on.
Charles? Charles, come over here. Have you seen these footprints?
Yes. Yes, I was just wondering about them.
Sir! Look what I found. Tumble off into the gorse it was.
Oh, what is it, Alf? Oh, it's a cat. Thank you.
Oh, what have you got there, Parker?
It's a man's cap, sir. Rather loathsome, isn't it? It's almost new, though. Sold by a gentleman of the Jewish persuasion resident in Stepney. Smells strongly of Californian poppy.
You think there have been some men here?
Yes, I do. Yeah, look, Alf, don't go wandering off. Stay here. Yes, you see, sir, on the back seat of the car, that grubby white handkerchief, that's a man's, too.
What do you think's been happening?
Well, I don't quite know yet.
Charles, do you know, I think I have worked these footprints out.
Oh, yes?
Yes. Now, there are three sets altogether, two men's and a woman's. Now, look here.
Yeah.
Now, the woman got out of the car, do you see?
Huh?
Her left heel sank in quite heavily as she extricated herself from the low seat. Then here, the right foot, less heavily, as if she'd staggered a little and started to run. But one of the men was here to catch her. He stepped out of the bracken in these shoes with new rubbers on them and probably caught hold of her. Witness these marks which seem to indicate a bit of scuffling.
Yes.
And maybe she almost got away because here, you see, comes the second man.
Now, wait a moment, Whimsy.
Uh-huh.
How do you know that's a man? He's got very narrow feet.
Long-toed boots, though, Sir Charles. Too long for a woman.
Yes, yes, you're right.
And I fancy they're bright yellow with buttons and were bought to go with that elegant bit of purple headgear that Charles has. Anyway, look. See how he comes along here, half obliterating some of the woman's footprints, until he catches up with them here. Then they all seem to stand around for a minute, shuffling their feet. Then they all move off in this direction, you see, with the woman in the middle. And what do we find over here? The marks of Michelin balloon tires. In other words, since the Austin's got ordinary Dunlops, another car, and a bigger one, too.
Yes, it's obviously stood there for a bit. Look at the oil.
Yes, just so. Eventually, though, it moved off down there, I think. But I can't be sure because the tracks become lost in a thick carpet of pine needles. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. The point is, at least one of the girls appears to have been carried off, and almost certainly by force.
Kidnapped, you mean?
Yes, Sir Charles.
Oh, perfectly abominable.
Yes. Except that I said she appears to have been carried off. Parker, have you noticed something interesting about those footprints?
No, what? Ah. Yes. Oh, 1 minute, Peter. Alf, get out of that car!
But look, sir! I found something else! Tucked down behind the back seat!
What is it?
A magazine, sir! Ghost stories and things! Can I keep it, sir?
Certainly not. Give it to me at once. Thank you. American Shocker, the black mask, light reading for the masses.
Bought by the gentleman in the yellow boots, eh?
More likely by Miss Findlater.
Oh, surely not. Hardly a lady's choice.
Well, it's not very important.
No. But have another look at the cover, Charles.
What?
Look. Someone has underlined the first two words of the title in pencil.
The Black. Some sort of message.
Done surreptitiously and then shoved away? Well, could be.
Well, what does it mean, the Black? It makes no sense.
Perhaps the long-toed gentleman is black.
God bless my soul. Do you think it's possible?
Charles. Charles, the cap was bought in Stepney.
Yeah.
Who do we know who is black and lives in Stepney?
Cousin Hallelujah.
Precisely.
Who? Cousin who?
Hallelujah, sir. Distant relative of Mary Whittaker.
And you think he's kidnapped her?
Oh, no. He's a decent old man. He wouldn't harm a fly. What I do think is that someone is trying to frame him.
What? Oh, but why, Peter?
Well, I don't know. But look at the evidence. Someone has gone to great trouble here in order to make us think that one of the two girls we're looking for has been kidnapped. Now ask yourself, Charles, why only one?
Wait a minute, Lord Peter. Are you implying that neither of them has been kidnapped? That it's all a ruse?
Oh, look at the footprints, sir.
What about them?
Well, to begin with...
Sir! There's a dead girl over here, sir.
What? Where?
A dead girl, sir!
Oh, quick, where is she? Peter! Sir Charles! Now, where is she, Alf?
Under that book, sir! There!
Oh. Oh, my God.
Skull smashed in.
Yes. Sir Charles.
Oh, poor girl. Murdered.
Oh, yes. But who is it?
It's Miss Finlater. Miss Vera Finlater.
In that episode of Unnatural Death, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Miss Crimson, Ambrosine Philpotts. Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe. Miss Findlater, Greta Gourier. Sir Charles Pillington, James Thomason. Alf, the Boy Scout, and the Maid, Denise Breyer. Vera Findlater was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Unnatural Death by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.